The Real Estate Talk Podcast, Season 2, with Robert Keilman and Joshua Britt.
That's correct.
Featuring topics about real estate nobody is talking about.
I need your expertise on it.
The Real Estate Talk Podcast starts now.
All right, Real Estate Talk Podcast. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, as we go and give you a new market update. See how we're doing so far in this 2024 season. We're 6 months into it.
Yep.
So let's see what news we can deliver to you today. Stay tuned. All right, welcome back to the Real Estate Talk Podcast. Rob Keilman.
Joshua Britt.
All right, guys, we're going to get into a market update. We are 6 months into the 2024 calendar year, and there's some interesting data and facts that came out, and actually more due this week.
Yes.
As we anticipate those results coming out and see where the market is going. I know there's a lot of buyers out there, home buyers out there that are searching, and probably, depending upon where you are in the country, is getting a little bit agitated and frustrated.
They're searching and praying.
Searching and praying, right? Throwing some Hail Mary offers out there. And it's not like that in every city.
Yep.
Some cities are doing a little bit worse than others, and we'll get a little bit more into that. We'll touch on that. Let's go ahead and kick it off. What do we got starting off with the national?
All right. So, yeah, it's hard to believe we are already in June. It's the first week of June. But this is a critical week. And the reason why it's a critical week, there's a lot of data coming out this week. And it is probably going to set the tone for the rest of the summer buying season. Today, we got the ISM Manufacturing Index numbers coming out. Which it is the health of our manufacturing industry.
Okay.
That basically factory worker jobs, things like that. So we'll kind of get an idea of what the manufacturing is doing in this country.
Yeah.
And then tomorrow comes out the JOLTS report, which is the job openings. Now, the feds like to look at this to see, you know, whether or not the labor markets are expanding or contracting. And then Wednesday, we got ADP employment change, which includes the private sector employment numbers. And we also have the ISM non-manufacturing index, which is the health of other sectors of our economy other than manufacturing. Thursday, we got initial and continuing unemployment claims, which is key data on how many people are losing their jobs, things like that, and remaining unemployed. And then on Friday, we got non-farm payroll focusing on what the employment rate is. This one is very likely to move interest rates. So I think of all of the data that we're going to get this week, Wednesday and Friday will be the two most important reports and will have the biggest impact on the interest rates and the remainder of the summer buying season. You know, there was a lot of talk about these interest rate cuts that were supposed to happen in 24, back in 23. And so everyone was like very hyper focused on seeing the rate cuts, which we haven't seen to this point. And, you know, I've always believed that if we were going to see any cuts, we would not see them until the fall time frame. It did not make sense for the feds to cut interest rates going into the summer. So it is we're probably at the very end of this, the tightening of policy, of monetary policy, and drying out the remainder of what excess money is in the economy from the COVID pandemic, because that's what all of this is from.
Yeah, I think we've collected that money back and then some at this point, have we not?
Yeah, well, I mean, it depends on what you look at. You know, there is a lot of data that suggests that credit cards are you know, maxed out for most people. People are using a lot of their credit cards.
Personal savings are coming down, too.
Personal savings is down. Some people are starting to dip into retirement accounts. So there is a lot of data that suggests that, you know, any excess money that was remaining in the economy from the COVID era pandemic reliefs has now been dried up, or is, you know, maybe at the end of drying up. you know, and at the very end, I'll actually give you a tale of two men. And it's a very interesting take on things, on how the economy is and where everybody sees the economy at.
Okay. Well, what I can tell you nationally, there are cities, and this might be a relief for some home buyers nationwide. There's cities that are due for a housing price drop. This is according to a Hill, a real estate analyst finds, and I'll go ahead and read it to you. Ultra high housing prices may soon take a dip, at least in a handful of U.S. cities. CoreLogic, a financial analytics company that tracks real estate markets around the country, expects home prices to drop in several metro areas over the next year, so 2025. While home prices in the Northeast, think places like New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, continue to see substantial growth, the cities with the highest probability of a price drop are mainly in the South. The tide appears to be turning in Florida, especially cities like Miami, Pembroke Pines, Tallahassee, Naples, and West Palm Beach have seen skyrocketing home prices. Now, some of their Sunshine State neighbors may be due for a price drop. So, and these are the cities with the highest chance of seeing a housing price cuts, according to CoreLogic. Now, CoreLogic classifies the level of risk for a price decline as very high, meaning real estate analysts say there's greater than a 70% chance of a price drop by spring 2025. And that is, number one, Palm Bay, Melbourne, Titusville, Florida area. Number two, Atlanta, Sandy Springs, Roswell, Georgia. Three, Spokane Valley, Washington. Four, Deltona, Daytona Beach, Ormond Beach, Florida. Five, Greenville, Anderson, Malden, South Carolina. So all southern states. And
well, Washington's northwest. But I think that the biggest point in what you said was a lot of those Florida people are, there's a lot of people leaving Florida. I don't know if people understand how many people are leaving Florida.
Does that have to do with the home insurance thing?
100% to do with the home insurance thing, and on top of the prices being high. So some people are just at a point where their homeowner's insurance is at or more than what their mortgage payment is for their home. It depends on when you bought, but it is so costly to maintain insurance on homes in Florida that people are just having to make that decision, hey, I'm going to go elsewhere. And then when you think about where you're seeing the highest amount of growth, it's in the Northeast. So a lot of what you had was there was a lot of snowbirds, right? Mm. They would live in the Northeast, and then they would fly south for the winter and live in Florida, and then they would go back to the Northeast. And then eventually those people were like, I'm tired of going back and forth. So they bought residency in Florida and then sold their houses in the Northeast. Well, now it doesn't look so favorable for Florida. And they're like, you know what? I want to go back to where, you know, I used to live. And so a lot of them are moving back to the Northeast. And yeah, when you think about it, you get snowstorms in the Northeast. It's cold in the winter. But when you think about the disaster of a hurricane hitting your home and the cost of rebuilding, and there have been so many people over the years that have rebuilt so many times, at some point that just gets frustrating.
Well, I don't think it's all cities in the Northeast. And that's the thing. You know, real estate, and we've said this before, is hyper-local. It really just depends on what's going on in your local market. Is it hot or is it not? So nationally, these are the top 10 areas people are moving from. They're trying to get the hell out of here. Yep. You know, so number one, Los Angeles County, Los Angeles, California. They're trying to get the hell out of there. Number two, New York, New York.
Yeah.
Okay. Three, San Francisco, California. That's west. Seattle, Washington, also out west. Washington, D.C. Was it like mid-Atlantic?
Yeah.
Chicago, Illinois. That's midwest. Boston, Massachusetts. That's kind of northeast.
It is.
Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Denver, Colorado, and Portland, Oregon. That's the top 10 areas people are moving from, trying to get out of there.
So one thing to know on all of those places that you said, those are all cities.
Yeah.
You know, and so the difference, though, is I think the people leaving in Los Angeles and San Francisco, they're probably leaving the state of California,
Yeah.
They are relocating probably east. You know, I'm working with a bunch of clients right now that are from California and Florida as well. But your people who are like in Boston, they're probably not leaving Boston in the sense of like they're going to California or they're going to Florida. They are probably like on the outskirts of Boston, like maybe in Connecticut, somewhere where it is a little bit more suburban like, and the cost of housing and the cost of living isn't as high. Same thing with Philadelphia. You know, Lancaster, Pennsylvania is probably one of the highest places in the state of Pennsylvania where people are buying homes. So it's probably a relocation from Philadelphia to Lancaster. But I think those that are out west, especially in California and in Florida, I think those people are actually leaving the state of those respective states.
And that could very well be. But I think there also are people moving within the state. And the only reason why I'm saying that is because on Redfin, again, they juxtapose the top 10 areas people are moving from to the top 10 areas people are moving to.
Mm-hmm.
So number one was Phoenix, Arizona. That seems like it's the hottest, you know, place to move to right now. If you're an agent in Phoenix, Arizona, drop a comment below. Let us know how that Phoenix market is doing and how competitive that is. Two, Sacramento, California. So it's within the state. Mm-hmm. So is that more up north, Sacramento? I'm bad on my geography here.
Yeah, I think it's northeast.
Okay.
Yeah. Of like the areas we were mentioning, like Los Angeles.
Yeah. Sarasota, Florida, number three. Las Vegas, Nevada, number four. Cape Coral, Florida. Some people are going there.
Yep.
Orlando, Florida.
Yep.
Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. San Diego, California. So I was stationed there one time when I was in the Navy. Salisbury, Maryland, and Jacksonville, Florida. So there's people, I think, still moving within the state, but maybe away from the coasts. Is that fair to say?
It sounds like that. But then when you say that was the path, the logic I was going with. But then you said San Diego and you said Jacksonville.
Yeah, they're both on the coast. So.
But here's the thing, though. We don't know what the data is or where they're pulling it. Are they just pulling it from home sales? Because San Diego and Jacksonville, what's unique about both of those places are they are naval bases. They are naval towns. So there could be home sales spiking in those two cities just purely due to the fact that we're in that military PCS season right now where we traditionally see military members being transferred from one duty location to the next. And so if they're basing it purely off of home sales compared to the rest of the state, then it could give you a skewed report to say that, hey, these are places people are relocating to. But no, it's really just military members being transferred from one duty location to another and not interstate relocations.
So we're Virginia agents, you know, so we look at the data of all of the national trends in cities, what's going on. But I mean, we're the best subject matter experts in Virginia for sure. Mm-hmm. So one of the things about Virginia market is home prices in Virginia were up 8.6%. Year over year in April this year. At the same time, the number of homes sold rose 11.2% and the number of homes for sale rose 8.4%. This is also from Redfin. Virginia housing market overview. In April 2024, home prices in Virginia were up 8.6% compared to last year, selling for a median price of $458,300. Now, that's the median now of all of Virginia. On average, the number of homes sold was up 11.2% year over year, and there were 9,826 homes sold in April this year, up 8,840 homes sold in April last year. The median days on market was 21 days, down one year over year. So these are the top 10 metro areas in Virginia with the fastest growing sale price. Danville, Virginia, 34%. McLean, Virginia, 33%. South Riding, Virginia, 29%. Winchester, Virginia, 29%. Rose Hill, Virginia, 28%. Hopewell, Virginia, 27%. Fairfax, Virginia, 23%. Petersburg, 23%. Annandale, 20%. Leesburg, 19%. So as far as supply, are there enough homes available for everybody? April 2024, there were 27,062 homes for sale in Virginia, up 8.4%, as we talked about. The number of newly listed homes was 12,739 and up 12% year over year. So supply gained a little bit,
mm-hmm.
which is good. If you're a buyer, you might have one additional option in a very competitive market. So so the demand is still high, though. So
here locally, yes. Yep. And to kind of touch on the trend and some of the names that you said, and I know this because a good friend of mine's, his family is in these areas that you mentioned. So, and they actually kind of did this shuffle of homes from Fairfax to Annandale to Leesburg. Mm-hmm. So, and what it is they live in the city. I mean, they work in the city, and, you know, they've built systems now that mass transit that makes it a lot more easier for you to live out in the suburbs but still get in to D.C. to work. So those three areas right there, I can touch on those because – and McLean is kind of right there as well. It's just southwest of some of those. So – in the northern part of Virginia, a lot of that growth in the suburbs is because of the new transit systems that they have, mass transportation that can get you to and from the city fairly quickly.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm looking at some more of these.
Danville is very interesting because I'm trying to put that together. You know, for the most part, what I know of Danville is it was you know, manufacturing city, but it was a small manufacturing city. So it doesn't really make sense unless there's some new factories or something, some new manufacturing going on out in Danville for that area to be leading.
Yeah. Let me see. 10 most competitive cities in Virginia. So these are the ones where you can end up submitting multiple offers on a property before you get it, going above list price and everything, and or more competitive terms for the seller and favorable terms for the seller. You know, okay. of those homes. So Franklin Farm, Centerville, Burke, Linton Hall, Newington Forest, South Ridge, Lake Ridge, West Springfield, Fair Oaks, and Fairfax. Those are the ones that's an absolute bloodbath if you're trying to buy a house.
Yeah, they're all suburbs too, except for Fairfax.
Yeah, that's the major city there.
Yeah, and again, a lot of that is the transition from inner city into the suburbs. And, you know, a lot of that has to do with transportation and, you know, there's a, I mean, even right here locally, you know, we're building a new tunnel system for the Hampton Roads Bridge Tunnel, you know, so,
yeah, needed that.
Yeah, we definitely needed that. So there's been a lot of money put into infrastructure, here in the state for sure, to get people to and from different areas, so you can work in the city and live out in the suburbs. But here locally, you know, in Hampton Roads, there's currently a total of 4,041 homes that are on the market for sale, of which only 3,035 are still available, and 1,006 are under contract, which is about 25% of all the homes listed right now are under contract. And our numbers for new listings is 577 in the past week, with 543 pending and 542 sold. So with all those numbers, there's very little differential that is increasing the inventory. Very small numbers of increases, and that could fluctuate from one week to the next. It's going to be really driven by, you know, what the interest rates do. If we start to see interest rates coming down, then you're going to see a lot more houses or a lot more areas on that list of places with competition. Because there's just not enough inventory being turned over week to week.
You know, one of the things that this factor that gets overlooked a lot is the supply data. How much supply is on the market? Well, think if you're in a store, if you're selling, you're at a grocery store, you have 2 months supply of these canned goods that get sold, right? You know, based on your sales activity, how long that's going to last, the supply that you got. Say, I got 2 months, and if I don't get a new order in, I'm out of that material. I'm that product. The kind of the same thing goes with the real estate market right now in Virginia proper, all of Virginia. There's 2 months supply, so if interest rates do drop, that will spur even more buyer demand because it'll be cheaper money. It'll get houses will get into people's price ranges. And I think, like I said at the beginning of the year, and I think you even mentioned it too, is we could see a reverse market crash where you think inflation is bad on houses now. If those interest rates drop, which, like you predicted, and I think I predicted as well, at some point in the year, it's not going to come to the fall. We've been waiting on these interest rates to drop from the Fed chairman when he says he expects to possibly drop them 2 to 3 times in 2024. Well, we're 6 months into 2024. No interest rate drops. If anything, interest rate increases.
Mm-hmm.
If we do get that with 2 months supply, oh, man, it's going to be hard out there. I mean, if you're at a point where you're looking at homes right now and you're only seeing maybe 4 viable options, and when you go and see them, and if you're in a serious position and you're offering on them and you're losing and you're losing and you're losing and you're losing, it's going to get a lot worse if interest rates drop, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's going to get crazy. it's going to be really bad. So, you know, if you're out there right now and you're thinking like, hey, I need to buy a house in 2024, if you wait on those interest rate drops, you could potentially end up spending more money in the long run, because you're waiting for an interest rate drop that may at best give you maybe a $30 to $60 a month decrease in your monthly payments.
If we're talking about the median price point.
Yeah. Exactly. And then if we're talking about the difference in interest rates, right? Yeah. So if right now you can get 6.75% at a par rate, meaning you're not having to pay any points, and at the end of the year you're getting a 6% par rate, not paying any points, that 0.75% interest rate differential could lead to maybe a $60 a month savings. However, what you could buy a house for right now today will probably go up in, value of it will increase more than 0.75% between now and December if rates come down and people start piling in. That's why you could end up paying more. You could be trying to save 0.75 points. But if the home values increase by, let's say, 3%, well, then you actually lost 2.25%.
Yeah. But that's serious math that a lot of people aren't looking at.
It's a different way of looking at it.
Yeah.
And if you're, and that's the reason why a lot of buyers are like, they're on the fence because they don't know, what should I do? Should I wait for interest rates to come down, or should I, buy now? Well, the answer is if you look at it from a mathematical standpoint and you use this logic, you buy now. Because if rates go down 0.75 points at the end of the year, but the home prices increase by 3%, well, then you're at a negative. You lost.
Yeah.
You lost waiting for interest rates to come down. So, but if you buy now and interest rates come down, for most loan types, you can refinance with, you know, a year after you buy it. Now, the VA loan's a little bit different. You can refinance faster. So it depends. But if the rates come down, you can always refinance later.
Yeah. Well, we're 6 months into the 2024. Let's pie in the sky real quick. Where do we see this?
Let me tell you to tell us two men here. Real quick.
Okay.
So yeah. you got Warren Buffett, yeah, right? Who, yeah, everyone's talking. He's
super billionaire.
Yep. He's been
Berkshire Hathaway.
He's been restructuring his portfolio of stocks that he's holding, and there are a number of positions that he's closed out, and there are a number of positions that he's bought into, and there are some that he's lowering his exposure to. And some are like, okay, well, what does this really mean in the long term? And, you know, no one's really in the mind of Warren Buffett, so we're not really sure what he's thinking. But he's lowering his exposure and only picking up. He's lowering his exposure in a lot of positions. He's closing out a lot of positions as well in consideration of his entire portfolio. And then he's only adding a few new ones. So he's either seeing that the market is going to, you know, go down or remain sideways, and you know, that's one person. And then you may remember the name, I think it's Michael Burr.
Mm-hmm.
He's the guy who predicted the housing market collapse back in 2008, in the movie The Big Short.
Okay.
He actually has bet an enormous amount of money against the stock market recently.
So is he shorting it?
He's buying puts against the stock market, against the S&P 500, and against the NASDAQ. And it's a total of $1.6 billion and puts against it. So he is probably betting on the fact that the Federal Reserve is going to fumble the ball and not get a soft landing. That is going to be a hard landing. And so he's betting heavy. $1.6 billion is what it totals on the demise. And, you know, it's worth noting that this guy is the only guy who called the housing market collapse in 2007-8-ish. And no one else seen it coming. So, you know, if you believe in him and his ability to call, you know, a downfall, he's proven everybody wrong once. Can he do it again?
Well, I think it's a little bit different because I don't think it's going to be a case like in 2008 where banks don't have money to lend.
Yeah, it's a totally different environment. But in either way, he's betting against the NASDAQ, which is
all your
tech. If
anything, jobs are going to start getting hit.
Exactly. Which, when jobs get hit, why do jobs get hit, though?
Well, because businesses aren't making money, so they have to cut
expenses, which is employment. So, and if their products aren't selling a lot, then they also cut because it's like, I don't need all these employees if I'm not selling. You know, if let's just say Apple, for example, if Apple's not selling millions of iPhones, then they're not going to need all of the employees. Yeah. So therefore, they're going to cut employment
and production.
Yeah. So that's why the manufacturing data that's coming out today is critical, because this is going to say, well, how
today
healthy,
being Monday,
today being Monday, saying how healthy is the manufacturing industry? It's a critical element because if the manufacturing industry is not doing well in the report today, well, then it's kind of a it's indicative that you'll probably start seeing manufacturing jobs start getting laid off.
So, now, and, you know, that's the theory of it. What do you think? We're 6 months into it, this new year, or 2024. It's not a new year anymore. Where do you see the market going for the next 6 months until we get 2025?
I think it's going to be dependent on where you are. It's a 100% dependent on where you are. There's going to be more losers than there are winners. And when I say that, I mean there are going to be more cities, areas, regions, states where home prices go down than you will see go up.
Yeah, I think those interest rate cuts, I'm going to go back to what I originally predicted, you know, is that we're going to see it in later 2020 or fall or getting close to the winter right before the election.
Yeah.
I don't know why if that coincides or it just happens to be a happy accident.
It is a coincidence. It is a coincidence. And, you know, you can go back to last year when we talked about it. There was no way that the Feds were ever going to be in a position to cut rates before the summer. And it wouldn't make any sense for you to
summer's
cut it.
Summer's the busiest season.
It's the busiest it's time. It's the time when people are going on vacations and spending money. They would not cut rates before the summer.
Yeah.
Already, that was a guarantee. Their earliest opportunity for them to cut was going to be in the fall, maybe September. Now I think that it's going to probably even go back further, maybe in a very strong maybe, you see one in October.
Maybe in beginning of November.
Yeah.
Whoever you may keep not kicking get this three, can
you
down
may
the
get,
road.
You may only get two. You may get a November and a December cut.
Okay. Well, I think that's about wraps it up. Everybody, thanks for tuning in. If you like this video, go ahead and hit the subscribe button. Give us a like. Leave us a comment below. Let us know what you think and where you think the market is going for the rest of 2025. With that, thanks for watching. See you soon.